All right, lesson 8. This is about the divided kingdom. Last week, if you were here, we talked about the word kingdom. I pointed out how, as you look at the Bible, there is a lot of information about the word kingdom. This is a concept which is introduced relatively early, and God just continues to unfold it little by little until finally we get to John the Baptist, and he says, you know, the kingdom of God, the kingdom of heaven is at hand, it's close by. So the Hebrew people, they had a kingdom, they were familiar with it, and then as things continued to unfold, they got more information about it. As you look at Jesus, one of the things that he talked about frequently was the kingdom. A lot of his parables were about the kingdom. And Jesus said, you know, I'm going to establish my kingdom, but it's not going to be of this world. I have a kingdom. Then in the New Testament, we read about people becoming members of the kingdom. So there's a long, drawn-out history. Well, before we get to the New Testament stuff about the kingdom, we have a lot of Old Testament stuff about the kingdom. Old Testament kingdom was primarily spiritual or physical? Or it's a physical kingdom. You know, you've got land and you've got a people and a territory and you've got a king and so forth. New Testament, a lot of people think of it in terms of physical, blessings, but in the New Testament, the emphasis is on a spiritual kingdom. So people kind of get that mixed up. They oftentimes become involved with what's really Old Testament thinking. Now, here he talks about the divided kingdom. Last week of you here, we talked about the fact that when the kingdom started out, it was united. First king was Saul. He reigned for 40 years, which again, that number has some symbolical significance. All right, after Saul, he's replaced by David, reigns for 40 years. So Saul 40, David 40, and then we have Solomon, and he reigns for how long? All right, so total, as far as the United Kingdom, we've got 120 years. All right, then logically, if it's divided for, or if it's united for a while, I'm in the habit of giving you the answer. If it is united for a while, then probably the next stage is going to be the divided kingdom. And that's what we're talking about today. All right, so now you've got Israel, that strip of land. It divides into how many sections? Two. There is the north and there is the south. Which one has more tribes, the north or the south? The north has. Now, I'm going to give you a little jingle, and we're going to practice it. I'm going to check you on it next week. The preacher meeting, they didn't like it. But anybody know offhand? Gary's pretty good with the Old Testament. Anybody know how many kings were in the north offhand? All right, you need the jingle. All right, now here it is. North, south, Israel, that's a reference to the north, and then Judah. North, south, Israel, Judah, 1920-08. They can actually sing that. I'm not going to do that and be offensive. But that tells you the number of kings up there, 19, then 20 kings in the south. How many, that was a total, and then how many were good? 0 and 8. All right, so let's try this a couple times as a class. North, south, Israel, Judah, 1920-08. That's good, we're all awake. One more time. North, south, Israel, Judah, 1920-08. And if you can get that in the head, I mean, that's something a lot of preachers don't know offhand. I asked at the meeting, and we don't know. We can find it out. Well, yeah, you probably could, and that may not be critical information, but I find that to be a helpful jingle if I got to go back and do some quick thinking about the Old Testament. All right, let's pick up with the first paragraph here. He says, the death of Solomon ended the greatest period in the history of Israel, the United Kingdom. We're talking about, in last week's lesson, the great wealth that he had. It is just major as far as what Solomon had control over, as far as territory and the amount of money that he possessed. Then we come to this second period, this second major division. He says this was followed by the divided kingdom, lasted for how many years? 388. When you look at a lot of history, you know, even countries, there are exceptions, but 200, 300, 400 years, a lot of times after 200, 300, 400 centuries take place, there are major changes in world history. So, as I say, there have been some cultures that have been around for a long, long time, but it's not all that it's not all that uncommon for culture after 200, 300, 400 years to be absorbed by somebody else, be taken over, or some other kind of major change. Solomon dies, and then who comes along and takes the throne? Rehoboam. And Rehoboam was Solomon's son. Okay, his subjects, they had long, he says, chafed under the taxation by Solomon. And when you start looking at Solomon's wealth, you know, you think that money was just coming from a riverbed, you know, Gold coins dropping down from the trees? Where is he getting the money from?
People.
All right, had to tax the people. And today there are a lot of situations where people still think taxation is too heavy, even in this country. Do you remember the story from a few weeks ago? It I think has finally been resolved, but Walgreens was thinking about merging with an overseas company so they could reduce their tax rate. Anybody remember seeing that in the news? So, okay, a few of us remember that. So even companies are thinking about tax rates and want to reduce that as much as possible. So then you have, in addition to Rehoboam, a second key character here, a fellow by the name of Jeroboam. A lot of information is given about him in the Bible. One of Solomon's generals, they asked Rehoboam to lighten their load. That would be their tax load. And then you have Rehoboam's foolish response. He mentions 1 Kings chapter 12, verse 14. I want to go back. I think it might be good. Because there's a lot of extra stuff said about this fella in 1 Kings chapter 12, starting with verse 1. And let's read down through verse 17. 1 Kings chapter 12, verses 1 through 17. I don't think if you pick that passage and you're willing to read it, you're going to be troubled with a lot of names. So somebody want to take care of that for us this morning? All right, Lois.
Then Rehoboam went to Shechem. All Israel had come to Shechem to make him king. Now it came about when Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, heard of it, that he was living in Egypt, for he was yet in Egypt, for he had fled from the presence of King Solomon. Then they sent and called him, and Jeroboam and all the assembly of Israel came and spoke to Rehoboam, saying, "Your father made our yoke hard. Now, therefore, lighten the hard service of your father and his heavy yoke which he put on us, and we will serve you." Then he said to them, "Depart for 3 days, then return to me." So the people departed. And King Rehoboam consulted with the elders who had served his father Solomon while he was still alive, saying, "How do you counsel me to answer this people?" Then they spoke to him, saying, "If you will be a servant to this people today, will serve them, grant them their petition, and speak good words to them, then they will be your servants forever." But he forsook the counsel of the elders which they had given him, and consulted with the young men who grew up with him and served him. So he said to them, "What counsel do you give that we may answer this people who have spoken to me, saying, 'Lighten the yoke which your father put on us'?" And the young men who grew up with him spoke to him, saying, "Thus you shall say to this people who spoke to you, saying, 'Your father made our yoke heavy. Now you make it lighter for us.' But you shall speak to them, 'My little finger is thicker than my father's loins. Whereas my father loaded you with a heavy yoke, I will add to your yoke. My father disciplined you with whips, but I will discipline you with scorpions.' Then Jeroboam and all the people came to Rehoboam on the third day, as the king had directed, saying, 'Return to me on the third day.' And the king answered the people harshly, for he forsook the advice of the elders which they had given him. And he spoke to them according to the advice of the young men, saying, 'My father made your yoke heavy, but I will add to your yoke. My father disciplined you with whips, but I will discipline you with scorpions.' So the king did not listen to the people, for it was a turn of events from the Lord, that he might establish his word, which the Lord spoke through Ahijah the
Shilonite.
Shilonite to Jeroboam the son of Nebat. When all Israel saw that the king did not listen to them, the people answered the king, saying, 'What portion do we have in David? We have no inheritance in the son of Jesse. To your tents, O Israel. Now look after your own house, David.' So Israel departed to their tents. But as for the sons of Israel who lived in the cities of Judah, Rehoboam reigned over them."
Okay, very good, and thank you. I know that was long, but I had that read because this is really the breaking point. We sometimes refer to the straw that breaks the camel's back. This was it. So you've got the 40 years of Solomon, David, and Saul, and now that finally comes to a head because of really tax burdens and treatment. There are a couple of practical lessons here, and these are old lessons, but they still, I think, are worth mentioning from time to time. You have advice first being sought from whom as far as an age group? All right, older people. All right, generally a good thing to do? What? How come? It is. All right. Yeah, that's one of the advantages of having a parent. You've had somebody that's probably lived at least 15, 20, maybe 30 or more years, and they've got some things to say. And even though you have some good advisors sometimes, man being man often says, you don't know anything. I've got a better way. Those are old ways, and it just doesn't make sense to do it that way anymore. Well, here you have an example of the old counsel being rejected. And second thing I want to do, I want to make sure everybody's got a copy of the material. Is there anybody in class that doesn't have the material? Okay. All right. As you think about what we have here in 1 Kings chapter 12, a couple of the quick points as well. You think people want their government officials to be nice? Yeah. You find some government people, and it's true in the church. Peter talked about this as well as 1 Peter chapter 5. Peter referred to it as lording over the flock. You've got a dictator. Probably not going to be real popular among some folks unless he's using his power and influence for good. So you have that problem here as well. You see, I think a third thing as well. When you deal with young folks, I don't know maybe the best way to express the question, but when you have a situation which is maybe somewhat confrontational, you think you might find a difference between how young people handle it and how old people handle it? Young folks probably going to say what? What's going to be their methodology? Especially if you're dealing with the male. Females maybe deal with it in a slightly different way, maybe not.
Rebellious?
Well, okay. I was thinking the more confrontational.
Let's fight it out.
Yeah, that's it. Let's go. I mean, fist to fist, knife to knife. I'm just going to batter you into the ground. I'm going to beat you up. But a young person, though, might take that path. An older person might say, all right. Yeah, let's try to work this out. Let's use some reason and let's see if we can come up with some kind of compromise if you're upset. And so you do find that same kind of thing today. And then the idea here was, if you think that you've had it bad in the past, now what two words do you use to describe how things were going to be? Okay, yeah. Whips and scorpions. Well, the whips sound bad enough, but when you use the image of a scorpion, if you thought it was tough before, you just wait now with the new rules and the new regulations. So you can understand, I think, why the kingdom of Israel finally split. The author mentions at the end of that first full paragraph that people were so angry with this reply that the 10 of the 12 tribes revolted against Rehoboam. They crowned Jeroboam as their king, and they said, we're going to go basically our own way. Now, as you look at the Bible, Israel in the north could have had God's blessing. They could have gotten along fine. But that was going to be contingent on what they did. So if they choose to live righteously, God says, okay, I'll be with you and help you. And if you choose to live badly, well, things are not going to go so swell for you. And as we're going to see as the lesson progresses, they did not make some good choices. You have there the final sentence or two, only the tribes of Judah and Benjamin remain with Rehoboam down there in the south, or Judah. Benjamin, very small tribe, so it sort of gets absorbed or kind of swallowed up, if you will. And he notes 2 Kings and the last part of the books of Kings and 2 Chronicles tell the complete story of the divided kingdom. And there is a ton of history here. Like most of the other topics, there is just no way where you can take, a two-page Bible study course and say, well, this is the history of the, kingdom. But you do have here, if you look at it, we'll just hold that for a little bit. But I will show you this. I didn't pass this out because I don't think it's needed. But you have there the 19 kings in the north and the 20 kings in the south. A lot of books have the information. I just happened to pull this off the web to give an example of that. So it's very easy to find the kings, to find information about them, to find the Bible passages where they were. In fact, they may be in the back of your Bible. So if you ever want to go through and study the kings of Israel, that specifically, you have to do probably a little bit of bouncing around as far as using Chronicles with some of the other material we have. But it's not all that difficult, and it is a very interesting study. Anything that you want to add or ask before we specifically turn to the north? Okay, thinking about the northern kingdom of Israel. He notes, as I mentioned already, it was not a very happy story. Lasts for 250 years. Once again, that kind of makes us think about our country, how long we've been around. and it had one bad ruler after another. If you remember that little jingle, remember? North, South, Israel, Judah, 19, 20, 0, 8. So Judah did a little bit better. I mean, they had eight pretty good kings, or at least you might say righteous kings, people that were not with the evil ones. But the north, you know, when you've got 20 kings and they're all bad, it's probably not going to go well. And we see that today. Corrupt politicians, whether it's a state level or whether it's at the federal level, that just flows down and it is not good. He mentions then, nine dynasties or families of kings reigned during this time. Several kings were murdered. You've got at least, I think there were about eight of them, if I remember right. Then you've got Zimri. He was also a king in the north. He committed suicide. He reigned for a week. So just a very, very troublesome time in the nation of Israel. You also have usurpers. And we, in our country, may not think about that too much. We hear about it in the news. For example, there was a coup in this country. We just don't think in those terms, and maybe that's difficult for us to process, that, you know, we've had, situations where there has either been an assassin that's taken out a president, Lincoln being probably one of the better examples of that. But our system doesn't allow for, you know, if Steve's president and somebody takes his life, then the person that was the shooter, you can just move into the job. We're not set up like that. But some other countries have been. It's kind of the old adage, might makes right. Well, that's not literally true, but if you've got enough power, you get a big enough army, then you can go ahead and take over control of the government. And we've seen that even in some recent years. And northern Israel certainly had some problems in that area. He mentions Jeroboam. We'll say a little bit more about him in a moment. Was so afraid that the people would go back to Jerusalem, to Judah, and worship, and want Rehoboam for the king, that he set up two golden calves. And where were those calves set up? They were put at Dan and Bethel. Let's head somebody back to the book of 1 Kings for a second. We'll have you read about 10 verses, and these should also be fairly easy reading. 1 Kings chapter 12, looking at verse 26 and going down through about verse 33. It's probably closer to 7 verses, but 1 Kings 12, 26 to 33. Somebody want to head over there? All right, Steve, we'll get that in just a second. If you have a leader, thinking about Jeroboam now, and you have a leader who is afraid, and that's what you have in this situation, what kind of leadership do you think you're going to have from him? A fearful leader. Not going to be good. Because how's he going to lead? How's he going to guide the people if he's in a state of fear?
Proxy.
Well, okay, and we see that today. And not just with one political party or the other, but with both. They send out trial balloons. They'll release some information in the news to see whether that's floating well or if they're getting a lot of backlash, and if they get a lot of, we weren't thinking about that. That was just some crazy reporter. That was some lower level staffer. We were never thinking about that. But if you're at the top, if you are the captain of the ship and you are trying to rule, govern a whole nation, and, you've got everybody or you've got the majority against you, you've got to have quite a bit of backbone to stand up. And Jeroboam, he's got some concerns. He's sitting at the top of the heap now. And, he's got a lot of people up there. But if you were a Jew, you knew that where was to be the place we worship? Jerusalem. So here his thinking is, I'm up here, and if the people go down there, what might happen? All right, they might stay. And if they stay, what happens to me? I'm out of a job. I'm no longer going to be a ruler. So I need to do some fixing here. Let's see what I can come up with as far as a correction. Let's start, Steve. 1 Kings chapter 12, 26, read down through verse 33.
Jeroboam said in his heart, "Now the kingdom may return to the house of David. If these people go up to offer sacrifices in the house of the Lord at Jerusalem, then the heart of this people will turn back to their Lord, Rehoboam, the king of Judah, and they will kill me and go back to Rehoboam, king of Judah. Therefore, the king took counsel and made two calves of gold and said to the people, 'It is too much for you to go up to Jerusalem. Here are your gods, O Israel, which brought you up from the land of Egypt.' And he set up one in Bethel, and the other he put in Dan. Now this thing became a sin, for people went to worship before the one as far as Dan. He made shrines on the high places and made priests from every class of people who were not of the sons of Levi. Jeroboam ordained a feast of the offered sacrifices to the altar. So he did at Bethel, sacrificing to the calves that he had made. And at Bethel he installed priests of the high places which he had made. So he made offerings on the altar which he had made at Bethel on the 15th day of the 8th month, in the month which he had devised in his own heart. And he ordained a feast for the children of Israel and offered sacrifices on the altar and burned incense.
Okay. Now you have to give Jeroboam a little credit as far as thinking things through. I mean, he didn't have faith in God, and he gets a zero score for that. But as far as thinking, you know, very secular thinking, I mean, he was kind of a thoughtful guy. You know, these folks, as we mentioned, go back there, and, you know, I'm going to lose my job, and, you know, I might even lose my life. So we've got to fix something. Now, why do you think the Bible specifies Dan and Bethel?
Bethel was right below the northern kingdom. It was actually in the nation of Benjamin.
Yes. Our government, even our government, likes to make things convenient for people. Remember a few years ago, Indiana decided to get people to vote? Where are they going to let you register to vote at? Driver's license. Come in and you can kind of kill two birds with one stone. We'll make things more convenient. Well, that's Jeroboam's philosophy. If you're going to worship too far to go down there to Jerusalem, don't worry about that. I'm going to put, you know, two idols in the land. You know, and whichever you're closest to, Dan, Bethel, doesn't matter. You don't have to go down there. Just stay in the home territory, if you will. Now, this fellow, as you go back and you consider what Steve read, he changed the place of worship, didn't he? Don't have to go down to Jerusalem. Now you can go to Dan or you can go to Bethel. Did he change the object of worship?
Yes,
he did. Did he change the priests from Levi to, you know, open it up to others? Yes, he did. Did he change the feast days? Yes. And then that last passage or two that was read, you know, he also became involved with this kind of thing to really lead the way. Now, when you have a fellow who changes just part of worship, that's bad. But when you have a fellow who goes through and changes virtually all the major aspects of it, I mean, this fellow is really off the map. So as I said, he really gets an A+ as far as creativity and trying to think things through from a very ungodly standpoint, a secular mindset. But spiritually, he was absolutely bankrupt. And, you know, bad enough for him to do that. But when you're trying to mislead a whole nation, which is, you know, he's got the 10 tribes up there, it was really awful. All right, anything that you want to add or ask before we say a few more things? Okay. Yes, you know, he came up, and it's the same kind of thing today. People come up with their own ideas, their own innovations, and, you know, let's do this, let's do that. Well, that's the way of Jeroboam. Okay, the prophet declared, and this is talking about Ahijah, you know, God says you just can't do that stuff. I've given you my way. You're not willing to follow it. So Ahijah comes, predicts the downfall of Jeroboam's house. Isn't that interesting? Why did he set all this stuff up in the first place? He wants to stay in power. He wants to live. So he comes up with all this planning, spends the money, and yet God says, in spite of all your human efforts, your secular, your progressive thinking, what am I going to do? I'm going to send you down the tubes. So you just don't mess with God. The prophet declared, the Lord shall smite Israel, and he shall root up Israel out of his good land and shall scatter them beyond the river. 1 Kings 14, verse 15. So the King Jeroboam not only created some problems for himself, but for the entire land. Jeroboam eventually dies. You know, Hebrews 9:27, all eventually face that unless the Lord comes. Idolatry becomes even more rampant than before. And then you have Ahab, the seventh king of Israel. He comes along, and then you've got Baal being introduced. Now, Baal, I talked about him a couple of Sundays ago, going back to the situation with Mount Carmel. You know, Baal was the fertility god. He was the god that was supposed to bring fertility to the land. People would go out there and engage in fornication at sites where Baal was worshipped, and supposedly their sexual sin, which Baal wouldn't have counted it as that, but that activity was supposed to promote fertility within the land. Then he goes on to say, during its first 80 years, the northern kingdom was almost continually at war with Judah. With Judah, that also was an issue. But Ahab comes to the throne, and then things just really sink. I mean, they just start to kind of plummet like a rock. Ahab was somebody who married foreign women. And who was one of those foreign ladies that he married?
Jezebel.
But you have people today, they don't know much about the Bible, but they do know the name Jezebel. And I find it interesting that they still, I've never met anybody as far as a girl named Jezebel. Has anybody? Well, that's interesting. Out of all the years, as far as the cumulative years that we have represented here, there probably is somebody because of the way people name kids anymore. But there just seems to be a stigma. And, you know, that is certainly justly deserved. She was the daughter of the king of Tyre. In this day and time, not so much in Western thought, but in that day and time, if you wanted to make sure that your nation was on good terms with another nation, what might you do? All right, you marry the king's daughter. You know, probably not going to go and fight against dad in his kingdom. You know, if you know, she's there and, you know, she could always talk to dad. So you've got political alliances, and not all those marriages were marriages in the sense that we think of, just one man and one wife. That was, you know, one of the things that people used to do to try to keep peace in Samaria's, and probably could use that today in some places. But Jezebel, she brings along, you know, from an idolatrous background, and she brings along those idols. And, you know, women always seem to know the right buttons to push. Oh, honey, oh, sweetie, let's do this, let's go there. You know, we need to make that adjustment. And, you know, some of those things are certainly good. But when it comes to religion, that's not so hot. I mean, there have been some people that have influenced, speaking of ladies, some women who have influenced men for good, but there have also been some ladies like Jezebel that have influenced their mates in a negative way when it comes to religion, and that's not good. He says that final sentence on this page, the final full sentence, it's doubtful that a more evil, unscrupulous woman is described in the entire Bible. And Ahab, of course, he was so spineless, he yielded to those evil designs. You have one more point that I want to make there before we start with the next sentence that begins in this front page. He was a spineless leader. Today, in some respects, don't we have that same problem, especially because of how society views men and women? We're coming to a point where fewer and fewer men seem to have a spine. It is a problem in society. Well, you know, kids, you know, let's play with the guns and let's play with the trucks and go play cowboys and Indians. Oh, no, come on and play with adults. You know, men have been, by God, created in such a way where they are the more masculine sex, if you will. You do have some women that seem to want to take that role, but if men are not taught that, and if men are not living in that kind of way, society is going to suffer, and there's certainly going to be some women that decide to do some things that are inconsistent with God's word, and we see those two things taking place today. All right, he says, God sent the prophet Elijah, we talked about that earlier, goes up to Mount Carmel eventually to cry against the idolatry. If you remember that lesson, you know, Carmel was going to be the stronghold for Baal. There was another female goddess in this area, and she was Asherah. She was, if you read in the Old Testament, you find references to the groves. God's people were going to the groves. Asherah, there are different ideas about her, but you piece of wood, you know, so you've got there, you know, your wooden goddess, if you will, carved out of a piece of a tree, and, you know, that grove then would have been a sacred area. You go down and worship her. And one of the ways that she was worshipped, of course, was sexual activity. That was a big thing. I mean, if you've got worship where somebody says, look, you can go out and fornicate, or you can come over here and listen to 6 hours of preaching. If a person's not committed to God, what do you think they're going to pick? Sex is going to win out every time. So this was not a hard sell when you look at the nation of Israel as far as that godlessness. So it was very easy to make this rampant. Baal back there with Elijah, he had 450 false prophets. Asherah, there were 400 of those goddesses. Asherah was also considered to be the mother of various goddesses concerning Baal. So you go out and you worship her, and you get back there into the idea of fertility, and life is going to be great. But it wasn't so fertile in Elijah's day because of the rain that had been withheld. And God finally had enough. He says, finally, this whole thing intensified to the point where Jezebel decided to kill Elijah. She didn't succeed, but did she frighten Elijah? Yeah, I mean, he was terrified. He's off there hiding, thinking that everybody has been basically killed off but him. But God says, I've still got 7,000 who have not yet bowed the knee to Baal. So people will sometimes refer to the Elijah complex, and that is the idea where, you know, I'm the only one left. It's just us two or three or our small group. But God says, you know, beware of that kind of thinking. Anything else that you want to add or ask before we pick up with that final full paragraph on the second page? Okay. He says here, Perhaps the best of all kings of Israel was Jehu, succeeded Ahab's son as king. He had ruthless determination. Jezebel ends up dying. Baal's worshippers, they kind of begin to fall apart. That's abolished in the land. His zeal runs out, though. People sometimes say there's just too much work to do. And for him, not everything was done that should have been done. The golden calves set up by Jeroboam, Dan, and Bethel, those were not dealt with by him. And then you've got this statement of most of the kings who followed Jehu. It is said they departed not from the sins of Jeroboam. Now that is, I think, a great lesson for history, even for our nation. You have here evil set up in the land. And the land becomes so filled with sin, so corrupt. Is it possible? Well, I guess it would have been possible, so let me rework the question. Is it likely that that evil is going to be extricated, removed from the land? No. I mean, once a nation goes so far, it's very, very difficult for people to come along and say, let's get it back on track. And with the Old Testament, you find that sometimes God did this with this people after the Babylonian captivity. You find that the Jewish people finally, it seems, they had their fill of idolatry. They didn't go back to it. But finally, you just have to clear everything up. If you've got an old house, you might start looking at the repair bills and say, well, we've got the electrical and we've got the plumbing and we've got some foundation issues. And, it's really going to cost as much to fix it as it is to build new. So we're just going to have to give us a clean slate to work from. We're going to have to tear everything down and we're going to have to start again. And, in a nation, there's some concern, at least in my mind, as far as where we are as a nation. You can go so far where it's very, very difficult, if not seemingly impossible, to pull people back. I was telling Teresa the other day, anybody here that the IRS has the authority to go into churches? Raise your hand if you've heard that. Okay, just about six or seven of us. My understanding of that is that the law authorizes the IRS to come into religious groups. You would think that it would be any tax religious group, and make sure that they're not saying political things. As I heard that, I thought my first thought is, I don't want one, I want the whole division. You send in everybody, and we're going to study the Bible with you. And if you don't want to hear scriptures, I think you're going to be traipsing down the road. But you want to check us out? Come on in and see what we teach. We're going to talk to you, we're going to do our best to set up a Bible study with you, and we're going to make sure that you get your mind filled with scripture. But you have situations where when the government begins to, start poking into religion, the source, the power that should be pulling people back in the right direction, it's just one more tool to weaken it. So we're not in good shape as far as a nation. A couple of the quick things here. He mentions, building on that thought, of most of the kings who followed Jehu, it said that they departed not from the sins of Jeroboam. Very, very difficult to get people on track. Spiritually, once a nation starts to go astray, and that is demonstrated quite well by the northern kingdom of Israel. Israel's political strength reached its greatest height under Solomon, under Jeroboam II. But once again, there's that idolatry. There's that weed seed, if you will, and it just really begins to take off. God carried out his promise made by Ahijah to punish and scatter Israel. 722 B.C., the Assyrian comes along, the Assyrian power comes along, and carries off God's people into Assyria. He says they never returned. That's true, really, as far as a formal restoration. There are a couple of passages that I want to deal with. You have some religious groups that will talk about the 10 lost tribes. Anybody ever hear somebody talk about the lost tribes of Israel? Well, they weren't lost. Let's pick up a couple passages. One comes from the Old Testament, one comes from the New. And if you can never remember the Old, at least the story that's found in the New Testament reference should help you, and maybe sometime if you talk to people, talk to somebody who says, well, the lost tribes of Israel, remember this reference from Luke. And they might look, I never thought about that. Ezra 6, verse 17. You have a couple minutes to get there. Ezra 6, all right, Betty. Ezra 6, verse 17. And then the New Testament reference. Well-known story. This comes from the book of Luke, the second chapter, Luke 2, verse 36. And then Steve will take care of that for us. All right, Ezra 6 actually mentions the lost tribes, if you will. Includes those in this statement. Ezra 6, verse 17.
They offered at the dedication of this house of God 100 bulls, 200 rams, 400 lambs, and for a sin offering for all Israel, 12 male goats, according to the number of the tribes of Israel.
All right. Now, there at the time of Ezra, you have a reference to the 12 tribes. They were thinking about them, and a person may not be completely convinced by that, but I do think that that is really good evidence to show that the 12 tribes, that they still had some understanding of them. Now, these people, some of them, you have some intermarriages there with the Assyrians, but you also, as you look at Luke 2, verse 36, you find here, I think, enough information, especially when you couple it with Ezra 6, verse 17, to conclude that some of them filtered their way back. You have that same kind of thing today. If people are chased out of their area because there's a war, there's a famine, or something else, they leave. I mean, Ray's kind of an example of that. Not that he was chased out 50 years ago. But, he's away for several years, and then what happens? You know, makes his way back for whatever reason. And that's really what you have with the Jews. Let's take a look at the Luke 2 reference. Luke 2, looking at verse 36.
Now there was one, Anna, a prophetess, the daughter of Phanuel of the tribe of Asher. She was of a great age and had lived with her husband 7 years from her virginity.
Okay, now you probably heard that passage, read it times. We studied that passage in class. But you have to wonder, why did God say she was from the tribe of Asher? Now, where's she at the time of Luke 2? All right, or where was the temple? Jerusalem. All right, now, Asher, was that one of those 10 tribes or was that down there in southern Israel? It was one of the 10. So now you have a descendant from Asher living where? In Jerusalem. So the reference to her, the information about her tells us, at least it illustrates the very kind of thing that we find there in Ezra chapter 6, verse 17. So somebody comes along and says, well, the tribes were lost. No, they were not. They did disperse. Some of them did make their way back and so forth, but they were not lost. But there was no formal restoration, as we do find with the south. All right, before we talk about the south, anything to add or ask? Southern Israel. Now, Assyria is the fella, or the nation that gets the north. Who gets the south? A couple hundred years later? Well, not quite a couple hundred years later. 722 and 586, but Babylon. All right, he says, in that next heading, Judah was smaller and weaker than Israel, yet through its 388 years, she did survive longer, and that seems to be based on the fact that there was better leadership there. Some of the kings were trying to do what was right in contrast to the north. Yet through its 388 years of history, it remained much closer to God. You do have several good kings there. How many, remember? Let's see, north, south, Israel, Judah, 1920-08. So you're going to have that tool by the end of next week, I hope. All were of the family of David. Judah began to decline under Rehoboam, but during the reigns of good kings, Asa and Jehoshaphat, you've got a revival sweeping through the land. And that happens today. There are times where things have really gone to seed in the nation, and it's tough to get a revival going. But it's like a snowball. If you can get that going, you can get that moving, people can be called back to God, that is a great thing. But it is tough in our day and time. You've got Netflix, you've got satellite TV, you've got all kinds of electronic devices, iPads, and I mean, there are so many things to compete with a person's time and interest in this day and time. So in America, it is tough. I mean, that's no reason to give up or to reduce our efforts, but it is more difficult than it has been in the past. In the following years, Judah borrowed heavily from the religion of Baal. It remained for Hezekiah, a good king to completely root out idolatry. Then you've got his grandson, Josiah, again, a good king. If you picked up that sheet, just as kind of a contrast there. On one side, you've got some information about Manasseh in 2 Kings 21, about the fourth or fifth reference down, would sum him up. And then on the other side of the sheet, you've got the contrast. You've got Hezekiah. 2 Kings 18 would be a pretty good introduction to him. And these two fellows just as opposite as day and night. He mentions that here, but that's kind of a little bit of an outline. So, like I say, we're not going to deal with that in class, but I do want you to have that if you want to see just how stark the contrast was between some of the kings. Then you've got Hezekiah's son, Manasseh, as I mentioned. He's one of the fellows on the sheet. He was as evil as Hezekiah was good. So I didn't create that material. That comes from a site, padfield.com. He's got some good information there.
What's the site called?
If you just Google Padfield, P-A-D-F-I-E-L-D. Member of the church and it may be padfield.com, but he's got a ton of information online, and like I said, just wanted you to know that that was a source for that. Then you've got Manasseh, 55 years, and if you can imagine, you're ruling for over 50 years, you are an evil, wicked king, your nation's probably going...
Not
Okay. Things are going to be rough for him and the nation if you have more than 50 years of wickedness. He was a fella. Every form of idol worship was something that he was willing to do, even involved with the burning of children as a religious ritual, and that's about as bad as you can get. Reminds me a little bit today, ISIS. There are reports of them beheading kids, so that kind of stuff is not new. It's been going on for a long time. So God promises through the prophets that Judah's also going to be sorely punished because of the idolatry. Josiah becomes king, tries to bring the people back to God, and, you know, that's obviously a struggle. After Josiah dies, Judah, that southern kingdom, rapid descent there. Then you've got other kings that come along, weak, bad, evil kings. Judah becomes a satellite of Babylon. We see that same kind of thing today with Russia and Ukraine, don't we? You know, Ukraine is kind of a satellite of Russia. Russia says, well, here's our country, but we're also exercising dominance or control over you. That's not new. You have that same kind of thing in the Bible. As long as, you know, the people over there, you stay under our thumb, everything is good. But you start to not do what you're supposed to do or not give us money, then we're going to send in troops or we're going to, you know, come in and, in this case, take you captivity. Very old tactic. Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, 606 BC, carries most of the people into captivity as the Assyrians had done with northern Israel about 100 years before. Zedekiah is the last king, and, you know, he has some problems. Then you have, as I mentioned earlier, they don't return to idolatry. The Babylonian captivity. Now, Babylon, remember, we read about Babylon in the book of Genesis, the Tower of Babel. We talked about Babylon in the book of Revelation, and we summed it up as false religion. Babylon, a symbol for evil, false religion. They did a lot of bad, bad things to God's people. So it's a powerful image in the scriptures. They remained there, the southern kingdom of Israel. They remained there in Babylonian captivity for 70 years. They finally return. And then you have some information that relates to that in Daniel, Esther. Daniel's got a lot of great stories, the fiery furnace and so forth, Daniel in the lion's den, the handwriting on the wall. Then you finally got the return, kind of three waves, if you will. You've got Zerubbabel, 536 BC, brings quite a few people back home. Then you've got the start of the, you know, putting a new temple together. Then you've got Ezra, a priest and scribe, brings back another group about 80 years later. And then you've got the information about Nehemiah. We talked about him recently trying to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. We dealt with some of that last Wednesday night. Not all the Jews returned. The kingdom of Judah was never reestablished because, once again, God intended to have a spiritual kingdom. Let's go through the answers really quick. Next page. First ruler of the northern kingdom of Israel was Jeroboam, the king who burned children with fire. Manasseh. Ahab was the is the answer number three. He had Jezebel as his wife. And then four, the king that carried, what king was carried into Babylon as a captive? Zedekiah. And what king was the son of Solomon? Rehoboam. Josiah, he's the fella, as far as the lost book of the law, that was in his reign. Number seven, who killed Jezebel and abolished Baal worship in Israel? Jehu. And then that good king besides Josiah, who was the other wonderful king of Judah? Hezekiah. True or false? Ahab saw Elijah and said, are you the troubler of Israel? True. Well, that really wasn't the case, but that's what he thought. Prophets of Baal numbered 275. False. Elijah gave the people a choice between God and Baal. Yes, true. Prophets of Baal cut themselves. The blood gushed with knives. True. Elijah built an altar with six stones. False. Elijah commanded that four barrels of water be poured three times over the sacrifice. True. Fire from the Lord consumed Elijah's sacrifice. True. Yes or no? Did the presidents and princes persuade the king to make a decree forbidding worship to any man or God except the king himself for 30 days? Yes. Did Daniel comply? No. Was the king glad that Daniel had disobeyed the law? No. When the king came to the lion's den, had Daniel been eaten? No. Were the accusers of Daniel cast into the lion's den? Yes. All right, 2 Kings 21. Who's got the answer? And I will stretch over Jerusalem as a man wipes a dish, as I forsake the remnant of mine inheritance. And then number two, he trusted in the Lord God of Israel, and like him among all the kings of Judah. Then number three, I am doing a great work, and I cannot come. And then you should have the answers for number four, many, many, tekel, ufsin. So that wraps up that one. Anything that you want to add or ask?
That Jeroboam was the people that were following Abigail and